Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on a zero emission future that we all hope for. Every week I get joined by one of the wonderful team at the EV Cafe, and today, let's go for it. It's John Curtis. Yay!
Well, good morning. Thanks for that welcome. I'm going without glasses today. Just thought I'd give it a try.
Oh my gosh, if that happened this end, I would be blind as a bat. But there we go. So every week we are joined by one of the pioneers, collaborators and innovators in our industry. This week it's slightly different. It's different but very exciting different. We have got a true star of stage and screen. Well, screen anyway. I'm not sure about stage. We'll have to check on that. An author. A shake of the head. Not stage, maybe. But we have got Martin Dory. Welcome, Martin.
Hello. It's very nice to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Well, we are truly excited to have you on. I was so fortunate to be introduced to you by Matt Sims, who is another podcaster. And we met up at the Motorhome and Caravan and Campervan show in the NEC, which was a pretty awesome place to meet, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was nice, actually. It was really nice to speak to you because of a little bit of the work that I've been doing about sustainable camping. So actually, when those two worlds collide with sustainability, EVs and camping, it's always quite exciting for me because it doesn't often happen. And sometimes the NEC, you can forget that we're trying to save the planet when you've got this five or six halls full of long chain carbons. So actually, it's quite refreshing to talk to people who are interested in solutions, you know.
Yeah, fantastic. And I think we were talking about it on the day. There was just one electric camper van in these multiple halls. I mean, it is singularly the biggest consumer show that the NEC put on, we understand. And, you know, there was literally one nod to sustainability. There was a little bit more, I think, in terms of the sort of solar and other bits and pieces. But I think that was about it, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, funnily enough, actually, I've actually arranged with Bailey to use that vehicle because I'm desperate to see how we can get on with a motorhome that's an EV, and you know whether or not I can continue doing what I do with an EV. So that's really exciting that I was fortunate enough to know the person who runs the company, and then I was able to say, "Oi, come on. Lend it to us. We'll get it out there because we want to dispel myths, and that's what I'm interested in. And also, you know, I'm not an EV owner, although I do have an e-moped, which I ride to work every day. But I'm in transition, and I know we have to be in transition, and I'm working out how to do it. And actually something like that, even though this is a show full of diesel and petrol and traditional technologies, it's really nice to see something creeping in there, and I'm going to jump on it as soon as I can, really.
Do you find people are interested, Martin? Do you think that people at shows like that, where you have petrol and diesel heads who are traditional, you know, they've been doing motor caravanning, motor homing for so long in a certain way that they're actually quite intrigued by you, that you have this interest in electric and decarbonizing?
I don't think that I don't really shout about that interest. What I do is I feed it in. I feed in ideas gently to my audience that I know are having trouble changing. And I think the audience, the motorhome and campervan audience, are going to have trouble. And I think they are going to, like everybody else, adjust to change and have trouble adjusting to change, and also start believing the misinformation. They're as good as anybody else. But actually, the way I see it, in my books, I talk about, well, if you want to reduce your impact, and you should leave the van on the campsite for a day and go off on your bike. You know, I've got an electric bike. And actually, next year, I'm doing a 3,000-mile electric bike trip with surfboards through Europe in order to try and say you don't have to do it in the traditional way. Let's try and do it in a different way because we can. And actually, maybe somebody needs to lead on that, which is why I want to borrow the electric motorhome, in order to be able to take it to Scotland and go to the most remote place in Britain in an EV and say, not that hard, you know, and actually to sort of play down the changes that you have to make. I mean, I know that when I drive to Scotland, I stop at Gloucester Services and I stop at T-Bay and I stop at the other one near Glasgow. and those are the stops I'm going to have to make anyway if I'm going to charge. So, yeah. And they're the stops I do. So it's no great shakes. And in theory, it's possible. So it's just about me finding out and telling people, look, this is possible. And also, by the way, go to a plastic-free shop to get your groceries, you know, buy local, eat local, all these kind of little small changes that add up to make a big difference.
Indeed. Martin, let me just paint the picture for our listeners, because some people will undoubtedly know you and some people won't. So the part of the reason that we discovered you is because you did the Campervan Cookbook, if I've got that right, haven't I? Campervan Cookbook. Yes, indeed.
Yes.
So you did the Campervan Cookbook, which kicked off really quite a career for you from, you know, you actually got your own series on BBC Two, which I know has been replayed all around the world. Actually going to campsites or beaches and stuff like that, parking up your camper van, an old Volkswagen, of course. You're a surfer. You've got to have a Volkswagen. Was it a T2 or a T3 or
I had a series of them. The one I had in the TV show was a Type 2, a bay window VW, which I don't have anymore. Because it's, you know, when you're traveling in Europe for months at a time, it's just really impractical. And also I'm a little bit older and I want a proper bed and a shower. So I've moved on since then.
And who could blame you? and so you went on to write a series of books and have written a number of books for a number of audiences. And I love it. The Slow Road Up, I think, is I think that's the title of it. I've got the title on a different page, but Slow Road Up, and that's England, Wales, Scotland, Portugal, Spain, but you know, just different places that you've gone. And I love that idea of going slowly. But a prolific author, not least a surfer as well. I mean you're just like the personification of everything cool, according to my son anyway, because he doesn't think I'm cool, but does look at you and think you're cool. Not least because you've surfed one of the same places that we went to, and I just kind of laid on a surfboard and got bowled around, and he actually tried to stand up and got somewhere in Mundaka in Spain. So anyway, a little bit about Martin Dory for those of you that haven't met him. So he's really, and you can check him out online and all that stuff. But anyway, we'll come back to that. One of the things that really stood out to me was the whole sustainable beach thing. Because, I mean, we'll come on to the camper van and Bailey and all of those good things. But it really stood out to me, the two-minute beach clean and Nurdles. So, John, you may remember Karcher sponsor us, and they work with a charity called Nurdle. But Nurdle is a thing. Might talk to us a little bit about that aspect of sustainability and plastic and stuff, because I know you're very passionate about that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the background to this is that as a surfer, I live in Cornwall. I've made it my life's work, if you like, to live close to the surf and spend my time close to the surf, which explains the camper van thing, even though it's a cliche, to have a VW camper as a surfer. But the reason for that is that you can get in the van and go somewhere else if the wind changes, or, you know, that's the reason for it. And that's why camper vans are so ingrained in counterculture, if you like, because of the Californian surfers, and we took it over here. Anyway, so I spend a lot of time at the beach, and a long time ago, I got really fed up with the amount of plastic washing up on the beaches. And so I started asking questions and deciding that I would do something about it. And about, I think it's more than 10 years ago now. I think it is 10 years ago. I started an online campaign with a hashtag 2 minute beach clean, where I was basically trying to encourage people to pick up litter 2 minutes at a time. So if you go to the beach, spend 2 minutes picking up litter, and then if everybody does that, we'll all have it'll all be great. And that sort of, because I was a writer, that led to, it became quite a big thing. I mean, it you know, one of the claims, the best claims to fame really that we had was we had a scientist in Antarctica who was on one of the Antarctic expeditions doing a 2-minute beach clean and posting it to Instagram, which was pretty amazing. And it's been translated into Welsh, Irish, Israeli, Greek, German, French, Spanish. You know, it's gone around the world. And up to now on Instagram, there's something like 170,000 posts.
Wow.
With people doing their 2-minute beach clean. So that's pretty amazing. And that's just Instagram. So and most of the work is done on Twitter. So that led me to write a book called No More Plastic. And kind of, I guess it kicked off my sustainability journey, really, is just going to the beach and seeing how bad it was. And then once you start looking at plastic, and then you start looking at why plastic, and then why doesn't it go away, and what's the problem with it, and then the ocean conservation, and then you kind of, it just takes you on a journey down a very deep rabbit hole, which ends up with climate change, and everything in between. So a lot of the stuff that I've been doing, I've been trying to, as I said earlier, I've been trying to sort of weave it into the fabric of what I'm doing in order to normalize sustainability. So actually, when I was doing a lot of cooking, so my first book was the Campervan Cookbook, I would talk about local food and talk about food miles and just try and encourage people to cook simply with good ingredients that they buy locally. And it sort of worked its way up to a kind of, you know, a head of steam and a kind of constant social media rant about how we've got to do things differently. You know, even things like Black Friday, which is coming up this week, you know, it's just a symptom of the problems that we have to do with consumption and consumerism, and our political system. And actually, it's all unsustainable. We can't keep going with it. So that it's just a kind of, it's a sort of a natural journey that actually, but it comes back to that we need people to love things in order to be able to work to protect them. So actually, I'm working on a project about camping at the moment, about green camping. And the point of that book really is to encourage people to go camping in order to fall in love with the outdoor world. And then once they fall in love with it, they'll want to protect it, which is exactly the same thing that Chris Packham does, that Blue Planet does, that, you know, Planet Earth does, is about show you these wonderful, wonderful things and then say, but we've got to protect it. So that's what I'm trying to do at the moment. And actually, camping is a really good conduit to getting people outdoors, because often it's the first touch point that inner city kids or people who live in tower blocks or wherever will have with the outdoors. And actually, there's a massive responsibility on the camping industry to do better. And actually, that land that campsites are on is not under pressure from agriculture or other land use. So these people have got this amazing opportunity to make amazing change. And I've sort of digressed a bit there, but let me
just unpick that slightly, Martin, if I may. It seems that you are a very strategic thinker about the environment, and that you are somebody who is the voice of conscience, in that you're talking about issues at a global scale and demonstrating your commitment to those concepts through small acts yourself. So the 2-minute beach clean isn't going to solve the problems in Indonesia right now, where there's tons and tons and tons of plastic washing up on the beaches every minute of every day. But what you're doing is you have these long-term goals of waking our conscience and collectively then doing something about it. Is that broadly what your direction is?
I suppose so. I mean, I've post-rationalized it so many times, the 2-minute beach clean, in terms of that the thing about it that's powerful is that it understands human nature, and it understands laziness. But the idea is that actually, yes, you know, that if there are enough of us doing small actions, we can make a difference. But what we've got to do is it's not about one person doing amazingly well, driving an EV, solar on the house, you know, all local food, you know, vegan, whatever, all these things that we're told we have to do. It's about all of us doing something, because then all of us can start the journey. And the 2-minute beach league was always about, it's like the kind of gateway drug to environmentalism, because everybody gets it. You know, you walk on a beach, you look at a global problem on a local scale, because plastic is a global problem, as you just said. You know, you look at this beach and you can pretty much go, every beach in the world is like this. This is a microcosm. And I can physically spend 2 minutes and make an actual visible difference. I feel great.
Yes.
I don't have to do the whole lot, because that's the laziness bit, right? I can stop or I can carry on. But I feel obliged. And, you know, I mean, we did a trial in Bude. We put these A-frame boards on the beach in Bude, and they had like a litter picker and some bags that you can borrow. And we had that on the beach for a year. There was a beach clean group doing a monthly beach clean. They'd be doing it for 5 years before, so, and they counted everything that they picked up. So in the year that we put this beach clean station on, so this is asking people to do 2 minutes, the litter that they were picking up on that year was 61% drop on the previous 5 years average. So actually, wow. And so that just shows you that collective action that's nothing can add up to make a big difference. Mm. And I think that's if you're talking about me as a strategic thinker, I think it was kind of the 2-minute beach clean was because I'm lazy, and organizing beach cleans is really hard and it involves paperwork and rallying people and social media and lots of hard work. And then you turn up for an hour and then two people turn up and do that beach clean for an hour and you feel great. And then you go off and do it next week. But actually, if everybody did 2 minutes whenever they went to the beach, we could help those beach cleans. So it was always about finding a little niche, which is kind of where I'm at really as a person, because I don't want to compete with anybody. I want to kind of enhance what other people do, if you like, and find my own niche so that I can be me, not try and compete with anybody else.
It's really clever though, Martin. It's really clever.
Thank you.
And you've turned a light on in my head. We spend our lives trying to get people to buy electric, to lease electric, to have a long-term commitment to electric. And I wonder if we might start by saying, go and have a test drive. Get your bum in the seat of an electric vehicle. Have no other aspiration than that. Because once you've done it, I've never seen anybody say, well, that was a rubbish experience. They come out and they smile and they say, that was great. I loved that. And I wonder if we're tackling this from the wrong end, using your example, and that actually a 10-minute test drive is all you need. You will transition because you know, actually, it is easy. It's not as difficult as you think. Have one for a couple of days. And maybe that's what we should be doing. You're inspiring, my friend. Wow.
Thank you. I mean, I would go so far as to say, borrow, hire an electric bike.
Yes.
For a day, and go cycling in a really hilly place and have a fabulous time. I mean, you know, I love cycling. I'm a reluctant cyclist. But when I discovered during COVID electric bikes, because I was cycling to the beach to go surfing, and it's easier on an electric than it is on a standard bike because we live at the top of a hill. The beach is at the bottom of the hill. So actually, that's why not even take it into even smaller places, you know?
You're absolutely right.
My transition is that I was injured this year and did my knee in, and so I couldn't cycle for the first few months. So I've bought an electric step-through motorbike. You know, and that's my this is my transitional stage. And I love it. It's like being on holiday the whole time. It just puts a smile on my face.
Clever.
You know, and
I used the Lime bike in London recently, the same thing. So I haven't ridden, I used to ride road cycling, and I haven't ridden for about 10 years. And a couple of friends, when I visited them in London, said, come on, we'll take a bike. And I'm like, oh, no, let's just get a cab. And they said, no, get a bike. And so I downloaded the app, got on this Lime bike, this electric bike in London. It cost me £3. And it was one of the most exhilarating feelings I have ever had, to be going through the centre of London with all of the wonderful sights, with my friends, fresh air, and it was just brilliant. And that was a real flick of a switch for me. You're absolutely right. We just need to try stuff.
Try stuff. I mean, and when you're on your bike, sitting behind a car that's blurting out, you don't often notice the pollution, and you really do, you know, especially on my moped, I really do as well, because I can go at 30, so I can sit behind cars and it stinks. It's horrible. And that's the kind, and that even those things spur me on to think, okay, well, I've got a car, I've got a van. It'll be the last diesel vehicle I buy. We've got a diesel car that's dying. So when that dies, we'll go and get a tiny little up or something like that. But in the meantime, we're transitioning by using the fossil fuels as little as we can and learning how to behave, you know, and how to do it and how to deal with range anxiety, you know, and all that sort of stuff and charging and being patient and, you know, all that sort of thing. I mean, this trip I told you about this next summer, I'm cycling an electric bike with trailer, with surfboards on it from here to the bottom of Portugal to show that it's possible. Because I'm fed up with surfers
cycling.
Getting planes.
Let me just clarify that. Cycling.
Cycling. Yeah. Cycling. Cycling. Yeah. With a tent and a spare battery as well. Cycling an electric bike with a trailer with surfboards on it from Bude to down to the west coast, down to Sagres in Portugal. It's a part of a story about following this kind of pilgrimage that surfers take, which includes Mundaka, which includes all those breaks through Europe. But I'm so sick of seeing surfers like, hey, we're doing a strike mission to Portugal, and they're getting on a plane at Newquay Airport, spaffing carbon, hiring a car, and just acting as if there's no consequences. Mm. And actually, one of the things that I want to do, and this is an extension of my book's Take the Slow Road, is for God's sake, slow down, you know, because you're going at 100 miles an hour, and then you've got 2 weeks holiday, and you're going to go 100 miles an hour in your holiday, and the consequences of all that are terrible, and for all of us. And we know that it's the top 10%, because there was an article yesterday about the top 10% putting out 40% of the carbon. You know, the 1% aren't the ones that we need to target. It's actually, hey, big news, it's ourselves, you know, who are the middle class, you know, middle earners. It's us that we need to be talking to, not, you know, yes, we need to be stopping private jets and all that kind of wanton destruction, but we also need to look at ourselves. And, you know, so why not lead by example, do it some small ways.
So. And that's what I've loved. And I think John referred to you as a strategic thinker. And I think when I look at just my brief experience with you at the motorhome show, a gentleman waited patiently while we were talking and then asked to talk to you briefly about, you know, the books that you'd written for his son and how much his son loved reading the books. I'm just going to get the title of it. It is Kids Fight Plastic, and I'm sure there's others. But I think you do some YouTube videos as well, am I right? That they might have watched?
Not necessarily. No, I think the TV show is on YouTube. So that's the BBC Two show that I did in 2010 now, which was me and the Type 2 VW going around cooking local food. Yeah.
but it's these things that capturing the kids' minds as they you know, as they're engaging in life, they're getting started in life, and you're giving them the right sort of things to think about as they start, and then giving them more to feed on as they grow, you know. Because I mean, listen, what kid doesn't love a surfer? As I've mentioned, you know, Jaden loves the idea of surfing, and we've done it. It was a great thing to do as a father and son, even though I was an abject failure at it. The joy of kind of getting out there and getting on with life, but also then, as you've said, weaving in sustainability into that whole thing. It's great. What was the inspiration behind the kids' books particularly? Was it this whole idea?
The kids' books, I was asked to do the kids' books because I had a contact with the publisher, and after No More Plastic was the first book that came out, which was an adult's book about small changes. And it was, so it, the 2 minute beach clean led on to the 2 minute solution. So it wasn't always problem based. It's about, well, a 2 minute solution is turn the tap off when you're cleaning your teeth. Why? Because 11% of our carbon, it comes from water treatment and delivery and all that kind of stuff. So it's all about picking away at the small things. So then somebody said, well, why don't we do a kids book when it's with 2 minute solutions, but also making kids 2 minute superheroes. So Kids Fight Plastic is about from going from naught to superhero in 2 minutes. And these are all the things that kids can do and weave into their lives, really, that will all add up to make a big difference. And so at the end of the book, there are 50 missions in this book. And if you complete all the missions, you get a kind of score in the way that when we were kids, the comics would give you a kind of, you know, oh, you're a terrible lover because you don't give roses. You only buy stuff from the garage, you know, all that sort of stuff. And actually, it's about, you know, hey, you've got 60 points. You're an amazing superhero. You're doing it. You're there. You're walking to school. You're planting flowers. You're, I don't know, encouraging your parents to give you experiences, not gifts. All this kind of stuff. But at the bottom of it is like, you've started and that's all that matters. So you're more of a superhero than the ones who are doing everything. So everybody gets something out of it. So the Kids Fight series started with plastic. And then we did climate change and we've recently done extinction and they're all about local actions to combat the global problem. So it's all about, and again, I've given some examples like, you know, in Kids Fight Extinction, I think it's like, you know, make a bee hotel, for example, and the reason for that is that bees are under threat because of, you know. And then if that's something that's important to you, talk to your school about banning glyphosate and stop using weed killer and you know, and grow bee-friendly plants. And these are all small, manageable things. You might not be successful, but you've had a go, and that counts towards your superhero status. So even if you've tried and you haven't succeeded, listen, guys, you are absolutely awesome because what you're doing is trying, and you're putting your peer pressure on your friends and your parents. And, you know, talk about me being a strategic thinker. I used to be in advertising. I was an advertising copywriter and I worked on TV commercials for years and years and years in my 20s. And so I've kind of got, it's the sizzle selling, not the sausage selling sort of thing, because the sausage, if your listeners will understand what I'm talking about, that kind of advertising is about selling sizzle, not sausage, because the sausage is the thing. The sizzle is what makes you want it. Climate change and environmental destruction and, you know, whatever, injustice, everything is just a big, fat, boring, old, terribly frightening, massive sausage, you know, and it's too big for us to be sold. The sizzle, on the other hand, is kind of like, well, you know, what happens if it's a hoax and you've spent all day, you know, you spent the whole year walking to school and spent that time talking to your friends and walking through fields or learning to appreciate nature. Oh, you know, what a waste of time. Actually, no, that's the sizzle. That's the good bit, you know.
That's the win.
And so I suppose driving EVs is like you're not going to be responsible for somebody having an asthma attack. You know, that's quite a brutal one, I suppose. But at the same time, you know, and so you true. Know, on my electric bike and on my electric moped, I'm not contributing to congestion, you know, and I'm giving people a good laugh as I drive around because I look stupid on it. They're like some kind of Mr. Bean. But you know, all these things matter and everything matters. And I think people matter and people don't think they matter. And as long as you try and make them think that the decisions they make are important and that they are relevant, then hopefully they listen and do something about it. You know, I guess from that guy coming up to me in the NEC, sort of, I guess that proves it, doesn't it? That people are listening. And that's brilliant. I love that. It's so, it makes me feel like I'm not wasting my life, you know.
Life is so complex though, Martin. I wonder, you know, I was just thinking as you spoke, I'm thinking cyclist, and you must be torn sometimes because you're doing the right thing, but me being a safety pants, I have to wear a helmet. So when I cycle, I'm very uncomfortable if I don't have a helmet. A helmet is not sustainable because largely it's made of plastics. It's made of poly, whatever it is, which goes inside it to make me safe. That overrides my need to do the right thing for the planet because industry hasn't yet got to the place where it can make helmets commercially that are sustainable and will protect my brain. How do we cope with that level of dichotomy when you want to do the right thing, you have to do the right thing almost, and the world hasn't quite caught up yet to provide me with the solutions I need?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. There's a couple of phrases come to mind. I mean, we have to learn to live with cognitive dissonance, you know, that we can believe two things at the same time. Not in a good way, not in a bad
thank
way.
Thank you, Martin. Thank you.
But also, Paul was about to say this.
but also that we're in transition, you know, and that, yes. That, you know, you can't do everything and you can't, you know, and you have to have a certain amount of pragmatism. So my pragmatism, yes, would tell me, you know, if I want to cycle, and I hate, you know, the yellow jackets, hate those things, but I have to carry one in my van for legal reasons. And if I need it, there you go. If I need it, I'll put it on and it'll save my life. It's pragmatism. I'm not, what I do hate, for example, is when you go for an MOT and they put a plastic seat cover on and then they throw it away. Now, I keep that seat cover and then I put it on before I go for my MOT so that they only, that seat cover gets used multiple times, right? So we have to have a certain amount of pragmatism and kind of go, look, we can't solve all the problems. The problem that I'm solving by cycling is A, B, and C. And I don't want to die, so I have to accept that I have to wear a helmet that's plastic. But I'm not using a new helmet every day. I'm using one, I mean, Lizzie's helmet, my partner's helmet died and she's had it for like 20 years. Yeah. It's like, how the hell did you keep that going? but you know, and that's just what you have to do, I think, because
cognitive dissonance. I love that. I'm keeping that.
It's usually it's used as an insult because it's kind of like, well, you've got, it's clearly a case of cognitive dissonance because you're an environmentalist and you're driving a camper van, right? That's what people say to me. It says the man with the camper van. Yeah. Okay. But I'm also got an audience of thousands of people who I'm trying to teach them how to appreciate local, sustainable, you know, food. So
yeah,
what are you doing?
You're making my life so much easier. Thank you.
But it's something that I have to struggle with in my sort of day job as the electric van man, for want of a better description. I talk to fleets that are having to make decisions around their productivity, their profitability, practicality of doing the day job. And as we looked around the, you know, the NEC, we saw one electric camper van, and you're going to go and prove that it all works. The slow road up, or take the slow road. That's it. Yeah. You're going to take the slow road, and it will be, you know, slow and steady while we're in that particular race. And I think we do have to balance this off with getting what is right for today, but also very clearly, I mean, my hashtag is get started, you know, at the end of my presentations, I just kind of hashtag get started, you know, don't look to boil the ocean, just take a piece of it and boil that bit and get those steps forward, because I think you're absolutely right. I love the ideas that you've put forward today of the 2 minute clean, the 2 minute solutions, and so forth and so on like that. Just kind of little things that make a big difference, and it's back to that sort of marginal gains kind of conversation that David Brailsford would champion, the coach of the British cycling team. You know, let's just get a little bit more, and races are won by hundredths of a second. So, you know, it's those little hundredths of a second that we can do that will ultimately let us win. I'm fascinated by the man that is Martin Dory. I totally am. How did you come about? What is your backstory? I mean, did you grow up in
Cornwall? It's called sex, Paul.
the birds and the bees. That's it. That's why you're looking
you
after
wouldn't
the bees.
Know, mate.
It was a loveless union.
But what an outcome, if you pardon the expression.
I'm getting flashbacks. But there we go. So, but Martin, you know, how did you become the person that you are today in terms of that? What was your foundation?
So I grew up in a place called Amersham, near, if people who live in okay. London will know it as the last stop on the Metropolitan line from exactly. Baker Street. I was a skateboard kid in the 70s, so I had a skateboard, and I loved it. And then I kind of, it sort of, the next step was to go surfing, because it's sort of that sort of culture. It would have been the, well, I mean, I had a skateboard in the craze. I still have it. It's not, I would show it to you, but I've just moved it to the shed actually after 45 years or whatever it is. So I sort of transitioned to surfing because I wanted to kind of keep that thing going. And that took me to camping, because I never had any money. And then that took me to camper vans because I didn't want to take a tent down and put it up every time I wanted to sleep somewhere. And then that took me to traveling, and then that brought me to food, and a bit of, I lived by the beach and I would go, this is about 15 years ago, I'd go lobstering and prawning, and kind of, I moved to the West Country in my late 20s in order to be able to surf more, and kind of, I don't know, I just sort of wanted to join this tribe or do something different, because I grew up in my schooling was in the 80s in the stockbroker belt, when all my friends were wearing pink shirts, wearing fake Rolexes and going off and earning loads of money in the city, you know, because Fenchurch Street was at the end of the Metropolitan line. And I despised it because I came from a broken home and I had no money. But we still managed to live in this nice place where all my friends had loads of cash. So I kind of wanted to take a different way and wanted to do things. I didn't want to just jump on the bandwagon because I didn't feel it was right. And it sort of seemed like earning money for the sake of earning money was just painful. So I guess that's that kind of niche finding is something I think that's categorized where I've decided to take myself, because I've always wanted to do things differently and I don't know, just not be, I guess it's, maybe it's an insecurity thing that I'm not enough me without being a surfer. You know, maybe that was it in the start. You see guitars on the wall. I'm a terrible, terrible, terrible guitarist. But, you know, when I was 18, you know, it sometimes worked. You know, that's kind of like, you know, maybe you're built like a what are they called? The caddis fly nymph that surrounds himself with stones in order to create a shell around themselves to protect them and make themselves look like they're something else. I don't know, because, you know, I'm just a freckle-faced, jug-eared, goofy bloke, you know, also ran from the home counties. Well, yeah, I guess so. And you
stop and look at humanity, I think that's the fascinating thing, that people watching thing. And you actually look at people and think, how can there be so many variations on a theme? But we're all pretty odd looking. You know, it's a very, very sobering experience sitting in a train station.
Yeah. For me, John, I know, exactly what you almost, mean. Almost, but odd is almost our superpower, isn't it? We're coming to this. The bits that are like as kids, we're bullied for being different, right? Sometimes. So if you do something a bit stupid, you're bullied, you're picked on, you wear glasses, you look a bit different, you don't have the latest this or that, you know, people pick on people because they're different or because they don't have or they don't fit in. Actually, as we grow up, we suddenly realize that actually it's our difference that makes us brilliant. It's our oddities, our, you know, proclivities, whatever they might be, you know, just kind of is that a really, anyway.
Nice.
But it's
that was noted.
Cognitive dissonance, proclivities. Gracious.
Yeah, we're just rolling them out today. There's a dictionary online, people. Go read it.
I feel left out. Anti-disestablishmentarianism.
Oh, well
I feel
done.
Really left
that.
Out.
I love well that. Done.
Thank you kindly.
I'm down with that.
but I think you are, Martin, and there's obviously coming back to something you said, and I wish we had another hour, because I kind of look at the some of the things that you unpacked there, the rocks that you want to put around yourself, and you know, kind of these things that they do. But what is it that made you rebel against that? I mean, you mentioned being, you know, a broken family. I've experienced that too. And kind of not having everything that everybody else had, and you have to put up walls or barriers or personality that makes people love you. And my mum tied a bone around my neck so the dog would play with me. But that kind of thing.
Don't do things like that.
but what was it, to come back to the serious point, what was it that made you rebel? Was there some particular event that you just got, it really made you angry? Was it seeing your mum or your dad kind of like suffering in some kind of way? What was it?
I think it was, if I could distill it really neatly, and I'll try, I think it was seeing the cost of keeping up with the Joneses, and what that did to my family and how they felt about themselves and what it turned people into, sort of selfish. I think my dad, you know, he was kicked out, and then he ended up getting remarried, and then he lived in Suffolk, and he would say, I love what I love about here is not having to keep up with the Joneses because everyone's normal. And it was like, yeah, but hang on, you did that. That was what you did to us, you know, by wanting the car, the watch, the suits, the holidays, you know, that we could never afford. And it ended up, I guess, being, you know, the broken home, I guess I've associated that with that. The sort of, you know, and my dad was always traveling. So it's kind of, which is ironic because I travel. I don't know. This is getting quite deep, but I guess it's just not wanting to do things that cause pain and do things that are pleasurable and that are positive. So actually surfing is something that is always, I mean, it's caused me more pain than anything else by hurting myself physically. but in terms of mentally, it's you belong to a tribe of people who are different and who are, I mean, not so much now, but it used to be a real kind of counterculture, anti-establishmentarianism thing that would automatically put you in this kind of, it's easy to categorize you. I've got long hair, for crying out loud, you know, and it's kind of, you know, I wear shorts. Right.
Nobody likes to show off.
Yeah,
nobody likes to show off.
Go away.
I thought this was a podcast, not visual. I'm just trying to explain to the listeners. So it's kind of taking those cues and those rocks that you surround yourself with in order to create something. And I moved to the West Country, moved out of London. I did a horrendous job in London, and moved out in order to make my life less painful, and it's turned out really well. I've got an amazing partner now, I've got two lovely kids who are sort of following a creative course, and I can see the sea out the window now. I'd show you if you can move the PC, and it's pretty amazing. I'm really lucky that I've been able to, my privilege has enabled me to have all this, which is wonderful. But it's not necessarily about things, it's about experiences.
Let's pick up on that then. So being positive as you now are, what are the things, what is the one thing that you have achieved in your life which stands out as your greatest moment?
Oh, God. That's really hard. And because I was awarded an MBE this year. And you might say,
wow.
Well, my mum would say that's the most important thing. And that was for the beach cleaning stuff. But that's not the most important thing. I don't know. I mean, we had dinner on Sunday with my partner, Lizzie, my two kids, and their two boyfriends, and we had a really nice evening. That's success, isn't it? And that's not me sort of being trite and trying to be humble. I'm just genuinely trying to think about it. I'm at my happiest when I'm surfing, and when I'm surfing with Lizzie and we have a good wave and everything's comes together and it's beautiful, and you know, that's amazing. There's nothing like it. It's really incredible in terms of physical, mental, you know, the mental health benefits of it, the physicality of working really hard and being in nature and all that kind of stuff. And it all comes from there, I suppose. So it wouldn't be one thing. It would be a kind of series of events, which is just about, I don't know. Yeah. Just, it's not about things. and
it, you know, speaks to your character though, Martin. It says so much about you, that you are authentic. You know, I think when you see people, sometimes there's a veneer and we don't get the true human being, but there's so much that you carry through your life. The simplicity of your life, the joy that you have in those simple things is hugely, hugely inspiring. Good man. Good man.
thank you. It's lovely to say, lovely to hear it. It's means a lot to me. Thank you.
But let me echo that. I mean, you know, from the first time we met, just there was a warmth about you, and that ability to just gently and warmly convey things that are, you know, well, as you talked about, globally changing, you know, that the 2 minutes beach clean and these ideas, but from just a simple place. And you weren't horrified that I didn't know, you know, the TV program that you've been on in Campervan Cookbook.
lots of people don't.
But let me tell you, they should know about it, and they should do it, because so many great messages. And I'm smiling from ear to ear for those of you that aren't able to see this. I've just felt... and. I'm not surprised by your answer at the end there. You know, MBE, that is really nice, right? It's like Meet the King kind of stuff. And all of that is very powerful. But, I mean, I too have sat across the table with, you know, my two kids, or we've all been out together as a family with, you know, and it's those moments... I mean, for me, on a beach in Mundaka, struggling to get across the tidal river that kind of runs across, and it's really quite tough, right? It's a difficult, especially at the end of the day, it's tired. But that moment with my son was like it. Though those are really intense, great moments, and we forget those all too easily. We do forget those all too easily. So it's incredible. I love that. So,
thank you. I mean, it's. Oh, sorry, I'm interrupting with the delay. But I mean, it's kind
of your show. You get on with it. This is what we want.
We sort of forget that. You know, that we're trying to push EVs, or I'm trying to push a sustainability message, or I'm trying to push. You know, we're trying to push for not war, right? And actually, if you have all those things, war and carbon dioxide and unsustainability, and you kill all the flipping insects in your garden, those moments aren't going to be there. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're fighting for. And that's kind of, I think, what people need to remember. And actually, it's almost like people are so anti it because they don't, it's like being a bully is cool, or being, or kind of, being a rebel is cool, and actually not, but you know, being in nature is cool, and having a nice family is cool, and having enough to eat is cool, and living in peaceful times is cool, as opposed to fighting, or I don't know, you know, one-upmanship, or and even in our industry, we know it happens. Green upmanship. I'm greener than you because I'm a vegan. I'm like, whatever. I don't care. Just get on with it. You know, just do something, anything. And the end result is we sit here, we've had a really great 40 minutes, had a laugh, and actually that's, my life has been really great for the last 40 minutes. So, you know, that's what we're here for, right?
So with all of that in mind, Martin, listen, we're going to give you a magic wand, and we're going to say, listen, you get one wish to do whatever you choose, but, and it will happen. what would be that thing? What would you do that would help us all? Because I, you know, I'm waiting with bated breath because I think it will make a difference for us.
Right now, I mean, being really pragmatic, we need to get all the oil industry executives in one room, and we need to tell them and get them to stop for the sake of humanity. And it will, and you know, that includes chemicals, plastic, that includes agriculture, you know, GM crops that farmers can't replant after, you know, year two. And that, you know, it's the chemical, agricultural, petrochemical industries that are truly us. And those are the people that we need to, we need to change their minds. So if we could do that, that would probably make a massive difference to everybody. It'd probably end a lot of wars as well. So,
yeah, amazing.
And on that note, we all have a moment of soft
for all
quiet contemplation as the hippie speaks.
But it's, I think we're all hippies in our own way, aren't we? I think that's the important thing, that when you talk to logical, sensible human beings, we all understand the damage. But sometimes the scale of the problem is so enormous that we kind of go, I can't deal with that. And I guess what you're proposing is that we get those people in a room to start the transition away from petrol and plastic and all those things. You're not such an idealist that you just say, right, well, it stops now because it's damaging our planet. You're a real world strategic thinker who says we need to come together to move from where we are to where we know we should be.
Well, yeah, that's very kind of you. I mean, even you know, even EVs, we have to just stop driving so much, you know, stop ordering so much stuff online, get it locally, you know, and then that'll take, I mean, deregulating the post office means that there's now 10 trucks drive up my road every day instead of one red post office van. You know, and that, and when you think about it in those terms, it's insanity. And so we've got to all kind of just step back a little bit and consume less and say, all right, I don't need to, you know, maybe I'll walk. You know, we know all journeys of less than a mile, blah, 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 all that sort of stuff. And we've just got to, you know, shake our own heads a bit and kind of go, slow down. Yeah. It isn't important. It's not making you happy. Do something else.
What was it they used to say? Yeah, but remember back to Why Don't You? Remember that TV program?
Yeah, I remember that.
Turn off the television set, go do something less boring instead. You know, isn't it about time that we did exactly that? And that was 40 years ago, I'll say. Maybe nearly 50, but it was, I mean, that was a great program, and it celebrated the stuff that we should be doing, ironically, by putting it on television. But with, you know, it almost just said, turn off, don't watch this anymore, go and do something, you know, go and play football on the field with your friends, go and, I used to go up to the woods at the top of the hill and, you know, go and find a cave and all that kind of stuff. You know, that's where... I mean, I remember, I mean, we were in Cornwall, and I love climbing the rocks, and we were on, I think it was Perranporth Beach. There's quite a lot of rocks down there, and there's rocks on all of the beaches, I know, but anyway. So we climbed, me and the two kids climbed up to this little cave at the top, and we were waving down, and people were going, what, do you need help? Do you stuck? No, we're just having fun. You know, just kind of... And my kids remember those things more than they'll remember this or that or the other. You know, I think those are the things that life's made of. Martin, thank you for today. I would carry on talking and talking and talking. But what I do want to sort of look ahead to... is you taking the Bailey van, the e-transit, with its range purportedly of 108 miles on a full charge, and seeing how you get on. I would love to come and meet you on your journey, wherever it is, probably on the way back, and just kind of grab some time with
if
you.
I make it back.
Yeah, if you make it back. But I have every confidence that it will work with your mindset, in the sense of that, you know, take the slow road, enjoy the journey. And I think, you know, there's a couple of people out there sort of championing that, enjoying the journey, kind of thinking differently about the way we tackle life, and that life isn't about the destination. It really is about the journey. It's about kind of enjoying all the elements that we have, and we rush here and there and get to the destination, have the moment, and then come away and kind of feel sort of we're a bit empty because we just enjoyed the moment. We didn't enjoy the journey there and the journey back. So I'm really excited to hear how that journey goes, and maybe we can get you back on to talk specifically about that journey, you know, because this is an area that's in transition, we know that, but it is right at the very thinnest part of the wedge. I mean, one vehicle out of multiple thousands that has been converted, and there's probably a couple of VW Buzz cargos out there, the ID Buzz cargo.
Yeah,
they've been converted, so hopefully you'll get yourself into one of those as well. But I think there's a lot coming in your world, your industry, as it were, and we'd love to hear more about it. Would you commit to coming back and talking to us again at a time in the future?
Yeah, I would. I mean, you've inspired me as much as hopefully, you know, you said I've inspired you. You're inspiring me to think, actually, do you know what? This is a drum to bang. And this is a flag to wave. And my friend Andrew Ditton, I don't know if you know him, he does a lot of work with EV tow cars. And he's fighting the industry, and he's fighting the cynicism, and he's fighting this anti-EV thing all the time. And actually it's costing him work and it's costing him emotionally. But he's on it. You know, you should talk to him. And I feel that I can use my platform, or if I can use my platform, to dispel a few myths and to pursue that agenda, not that it's an agenda in a sort of sinister way,
no,
but just an agenda of let's change the way we do things. Let's slow down. We have to, you know, and if that means taking a few more stops on the motorway, so what? You know, go and experience some amazing hot dogs or something. I don't know what you can do. but you know, it's making me feel like this is a flag that I've got to wave. So you're pushing me to do that, and I will. And that sounds brilliant. Good. So, yeah, let's keep in touch on that.
Well, if we can just dispel the myth that was commented on with the vehicle at the show, that it's not a crematorium on wheels, i.e. that it will just burst into flames with you in it. Let's hope that that's not true, because that would be very bad for everybody, not least beaches all around the world. It would be good to get you back in one piece, not toasted in any way, shape or form. But we know that that's not going to happen. But maybe one of the myths that we can bust by your little journey up to Scotland in the Bailey, what was it called? The Endeavour. Yes, it was called the Bailey Endeavour, isn't it?
Sounds like Mart of the Antarctic. I won't go that far, obviously.
Well, funnily enough, somebody, a friend of ours, a guy called Chris Ramsey, is just about to head on to the Antarctic in a Nissan Ariya. So it's an electric car. And he's just got to the tip of Argentina, Punta Arenas or something like that. Yeah, something
Arenas.
But Punta Arenas from the North Pole. So he's already been to the North Pole and all the way down.
Wow. Okay.
So maybe you could do that in a camper van.
Well, I mean, I've already been to the Arctic Circle in a camper van, but it was a diesel. Let's bring it on. Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's I don't know. Let's be harbingers of good things.
Harbingers of good things. Absolutely. And on that note, John, final thought from you. It can only be a good one, because I know that you've been smiling so much, and I know that you've loved this chat, but final thoughts.
The EV Cafe takeaway is sometimes I feel it's one of those things that you get up and you just do, and you talk to people, and every time I enjoy it, I enjoy the process. Today has been different, because I feel like I found a new friend. I genuinely feel that Martin Dory has entered my life, and I didn't expect that. I'd be really honest with you. I thought, oh, we're going to go and talk about motorhomes. Okay, that would be interesting. And here we are. You have pricked my conscience. You've given me tools to do what I do better. You've made me think about my work, my life. You are the complete package, my friend. And I genuinely hope that we can become friends from this, because you make me feel something that few people do. Paul does this for me. Paul is a very, very good sounding board. I have few friends in my life who are genuine and get to my core. I have lots of people I know. I've started on a journey with you. I'd like to keep it going.
Brilliant. Thank you. Well, likewise. I mean, this is, you know, this is just the beginning, isn't it? It has to be for all of us, because we're better, stronger together than we are apart. And
absolutely.
I don't know, everybody, if we all our own little niches, you know, it's the long tail effect. You talked about it earlier, didn't you, about marginal gains in sport as well as in environmentalism. Just vital, really, for everybody. And that's all that matters. You know, you don't have to do the Olympics, do you? Just start one step at a time. But yes, thank you. That's really kind of you to say that. I love it.
No. Bless you, Martin. Thank you.
And, well, I can only summarise this with, I'm deeply disappointed that we are finishing this conversation now. I would love to continue it. It has been a genuine inspiration. I've loved meeting you in person and following it on from here. I love the idea of that, like John, that we'll share a little bit of the journey as we go through life together now, better, I think, for knowing you, and all of the people that listen to this podcast will absolutely be better for knowing it. They should definitely do the 2-minute beach clean. And next time I arrive on a beach, I will be doing that. And I love being on the beach. I love being by the sea. It's my favourite place. It's where my happy thought is. Meadfoot Beach in Torquay is where I found my happy thought when I was 42. I remembered it back from I grew up going to that beach. And now I've got a purpose, another purpose, to get onto that beach and make a difference in a tiny way. Maybe 2 minutes as I arrive, and then maybe 2 minutes as I go as well. So we'll double it to 4 minutes. But it'll only be a 2-minute beach clean, because I'm inherently lazy, just like everybody else. but Martin, thank you.
I mean,
thank you for today.
Yeah, that's all right. Next time we speak, I'll tell you about how I nearly died at Mundaka. There's a cliffhanger.
Yes,
for
yes. But I mean, this is the thing. We haven't touched on the surfing. We haven't touched really on the Campervan cookbook. We haven't touched on all of the books, but we've had an amazing conversation. And there's so much more to unwrap. So I look forward to that. Martin Dory, thank you so much. Please do, everybody, kind of head over to Amazon. Well, actually, go to your local bookshop. Find one of his books.
Yeah, or bookstore.org.
So I presume that they have a more sustainable approach to getting the book to you than perhaps Amazon might. Is that the story?
Yeah, they're a collection of local bookstores. So your local bookshop will stock... you'll be able to buy it from your local bookshop, so it'll be shipped from there, as opposed to over there and over there and over there and then over there and then to you.
Cool. So there you go. So bookstore.org. Go there to get Martin's plethora of books. There's another good word. A plethora of books for your kids, for yourself, for your campervanning journeys, and all of those good things. Martin is an absolute mine of knowledge. He's been an inspiration today. Martin, thank you. Do head over to evcafe.org for many more podcasts just like this. Have a great day, everybody, and thanks for spending your time with us today.